What's going on, everybody? It's another episode of Textual Talk. I don't know what episode this is, but it is season two. And I got another banger for y'all today, man. We're going to bye-bye real quick. Hey, if you listen on Spotify, Apple Music, Anchor, whatever you listen to it on, go ahead and make sure you subscribe to the podcast, favorite, leave a review. You watching on YouTube, you know what to do. Share it, like it, YouTube algorithm. And if you want to be on, DM me. It's only going up, you know, this year in 2022.
Bringing the vibes, I see.
But all right, I'm going to cut that off. Let's go. All right, guys. Man, we got special guests with us today, man. No other than Mr. Eric. Let's give him a round of applause real quick.
Yo. Thanks for having me, bro.
All right, man. Can you go ahead and pretty much give the audience the rundown of kind of your background and your bio?
Yeah, for sure. So Eric Thomas on Twitter can be found at the E is for Extra. Background is all over tech. So I started, you know, when I was 15, got my first job when I was tech job when I was 15, started as what they were calling at the time an IT assistant for Memphis Public Library. From there, sort of went into retail computer repair. And then got into help desk, then got into networking, then got into systems administration, then got into cybersecurity. So background kind of all over the place. But more recently, in the recent years, I've made the transition. I'm currently making the transition from InfoSec over to cloud security. So most of my expertise is in threat intelligence and security operations, as well as that cloud security piece. So. Yeah, man. Happy to be here. Happy to talk security. Happy to talk tech all over the spectrum. So
nice, man. Nice intro. Where you located, if you don't mind me asking?
Right now I'm in Florida, down bottom. So yeah, it's okay if you can deal with the weather and the people.
I think it's what is it? Is it hot out there right now?
It's warm compared to the rest of the country. I just came in and it was like 78, 79. So,
man, that's perfect. Like, I'm in Texas. So it was, man, it was probably like 70 last week. And then today it was like 30 something. So it warmed up a little bit. So it might be 40, 50. I went and worked out. So my body temp is up a little bit. So I don't really know.
That's still pretty cold.
The real temp. But, anyway, so we'll break down, I guess, like the beginning. I heard you say 15 in the library. So we'll go probably like adult age when you started. Okay. Or before I do that, did you do any schooling, or was everything more so work experience and then certs or whatever? We'll go there and then we'll get into like your background.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I actually went to school to be an English teacher. That's sort of, you know, I came sort of full circle when I started teaching tech. But so I always tell people I'm a formally trained teacher and a self-taught tech. Technology for me was always a hobby. You know, age-old story. Millennial, taught myself HTML to do MySpace and then started designing people's MySpace pages. And then, you know, when you grow up in, you know, the inner city, I guess is the new PC term for it. But when you grow up, if you can do one thing on computers, you become the computer dude. Right. So, you know, somebody was like, hey, can you fix this computer? And so that's when I kind of started to play around with desktop support and learning about operating systems and stuff like that. So that kind of. So, like I said, I went to college to be a teacher, and during college, I actually worked at a computer repair shop. So that was where the retail IT came from. So worked at we had a small computer repair shop called Spots Computers right near campus, and a lot of students and stuff would come in there. So the owner liked to keep students working because that gets other students in the door. And sort of that was sort of his business model. So yeah, got into computer repair. And that's kind of where it took off, man. That's kind of where I really really got my chops.
Nice. And I like how you threw that teacher element in, because I know a couple people that one of my clients, he was a teacher and then he's transitioned over into cyber. And then I know another person who she's a teacher and she's been trying to get into tech. And I always tell people that most of anybody can do it. Now, what you specify in or do may be a little different, but what type of skills did you, I mean, I know you was working on the computers, but from teaching, what type of skills did you take from teaching into transitioning to, you know, your career now?
Number one, critical thinking. Being able to frame a problem in your mind and basically either put it into a pattern or almost visually lay it out into a pattern. So like some sort of sequential pattern, or lay it out as a puzzle. So a pattern or a puzzle. And that's one of the things we teach at Cover Six, is when you approach problems, you approach it as a pattern or a puzzle. So when you're looking at a pattern, you might be looking at a process from start to finish. Right. So when we think of that, we think of if you're looking at an IOC, right, and you have frameworks like the MITRE ATT&CK framework or the cyber kill chain, then that gives you sort of a sequential pattern to follow. Or you may approach it like a puzzle where it's like, OK, I got this piece. Where I need to focus my critical thinking is to fill in the blanks. So that was the main thing. And teaching, it was critical for you to teach that. But it was also critical for you to understand that as you approach problems that students were having, right? So you might have, I taught English or taught fourth, fifth, and sixth grade reading. So you might have a student who's really, 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 really strong in, understanding syntax, right? But may not be as strong in understanding pragmatism. And so what I would do is I would say, okay, well, if you understand syntax, then I have to think about the elements of syntax, which is in a parts of speech term is one of the more difficult things for people who are developing a language. It's like conjugation almost, right? So yeah, I sort of took that critical thinking piece and that pattern and puzzle piece. And that really helped me early on, especially like with, I think you and I have talked about it on Twitter before, like, how we still use those help desk tricks of the trade to figure out problems now, right? So it's sort of that pattern and puzzle when we talk about from a security standpoint. If you're in a SOC and you know you see the order, you know the pattern that processes are supposed to initiate on a Windows system, right? So if I see process ID number 4, I know that's where everything starts, right? That's the system starting up. And, you know, then you start to learn those child processes and then the child processes that come from those, and you can kind of map that pattern out. And so when you see deviations from that pattern, that's when you get that detection and response piece. So critical thinking and pattern matching would probably be the most critical two. And then I would say customer service or just dealing with people in general. When you're dealing with fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, you got a lot of personalities, a lot of developing personalities who don't understand appropriateness yet, right? They're coming from households all over the place where, you know, my mom over here, let me do this. My mom over here, let me do this. And then now you got to come into the classroom and you got to say, okay, well, this is my classroom. And so I have to set sort of a standard and get everybody aligned, everybody on the same page and focused on learning. So you learn how to adjust to people's learning style. You learn how to, you know, the best way to resolve conflict between students as well as between yourself and another student. So those three things have been critical in my career. I'm not even gonna say almost. Those three things have been as critical as my technical skills.
Nice, man. Let me give you a gunshot real quick.
appreciate it. Let him go.
But yeah, I like that, because if I could draw a parallel to what you were saying about managing kids and what they do, different things, I'm drawing a parallel to if I'm a client environment and then you come in as like the new sheriff in town, you got to manage and you know these egos and how they typically do things. This department like to do this. This one do this. You got to understand them and figure out a happy medium to pretty much get the job done. Honestly, when it comes to that, that's why I tell people a lot of times, don't undersell like your soft skills, because a lot of the technical stuff, some people may not have an aptitude, but most people, if they're willing to learn, they'll eventually grasp it. But them soft skills is what really, depending on what type of position you do, can really kind of be your equalizer. Like you probably be weak in a lot of stuff. Like, you know what? I like this person's attitude. I like their personality. They show me that they really do it. And they, you know, show me through their interview process or whatever that they're are problem solvers. So,
absolutely.
How long? So before, what did you do before the SOC role that you're doing now?
So before SOC, the immediate role before this, I was actually on the GRC side. I was actually on the compliance side in healthcare. So essentially my job.
Hang on
was
real quick. I need you to highlight that a lot. I ain't stopping it right now, but I'm like, you know, a lot of people come to me about, oh, I want to do this and that. And a lot of people don't even think about GRC. And I'm like, it's a lower barrier to entry. Yes. And you're still going to get a bag because they need it. You know, mm-hmm. So
they need it bad. Like SecOps is the solution to the objective of GRC, right? So the business wants to be compliant. The business wants to protect themselves. And, you know, one of the things we teach in Cover 6 is that process of understanding patterns of business. And we can definitely touch on that, but I want to make sure, you know, I get to your question, because that's a big, big part of what I think we're missing in the security world, especially security operations, is we do this whole us and the business thing, right? Whereas we don't look at the business as a part of what we're doing. And I think we sort of, mm-hmm. That's where we sort of go left, right? But anyway, I came from the GRC world. So I was in healthcare IT. And in that GRC role, my job was essentially to review the three frameworks, the framework, as well as the two compliance standards that we had to adhere to. So we had HITRUST and HIPAA. And my job was to essentially audit the controls. So I take the policy that we had. I'll make sure that our policies were aligned with HIPAA and HITRUST. And if our policies were aligned with HIPAA and HITRUST, then I look at our technical controls based on the NIST cybersecurity framework, NIST Special Publication 800-53, right? I take that and I make sure that our technical controls were aligned with that. And my job was to produce those reports and make recommendations on where we needed to make changes so that we can make sure that we were in compliance, as well as we can make sure that our security controls were up to par with what our policies were.
Nice. What were the qualifications that helped you get into that role? Or better yet, let me frame it like this. What should somebody know who wants to do that?
If you want to get into GRC, the first thing is you need to understand policy and frameworks. Some frameworks I would definitely call out is, like I said, NIST Special Publication 800-53. It's a snooze read. Like, that shit is boring. But understanding that framework is essential. Then I would say you want to get really familiar with some of the compliance standards like HIPAA, HITRUST, PCI, DSS. Some of those things. You want to get your auditing skills up. So, you know, the CISA is a great certification for that. If I had to point to a specific certification, the CISA is a good certification for that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Before you keep going, do you need a certain amount of experience to take the CISA?
That I'm not sure.
Cause I've seen him before. I know, like, it's one of those. I remember one of my old. He wasn't my direct manager, but I remember he took it 3 years ago. So that might be something.
I'm not sure what qualifications you have to have. I think maybe you have to have like a year or two of experience in one of the domains. But you know how those certifications work, right? If you work help desk, chances are you have experience in all of them. Right. So that's where, you know, consultant agencies like yours come in, right? Where it's like, sometimes you just need somebody to point you in the right direction. When we do career coaching over at Cover 6, a lot of times I hear people say, I've been working at help desk for 3 years and I want to get into security, but they're telling me I need identity and access management.
And you've been doing it already.
And I'm like, that's probably all you did. Or they're like, no, they say I need identity and access management. They say I need endpoint analysis. They say I need config management. I'm like, yeah, that's your job. That's your job.
And that's the thing too. Help desk people, I can't say all help desk people, but most people who are stuck, the only reason they're stuck is because they just don't know how to rephrase what they've been doing in a way that aligns with the job title, because they've been doing all that stuff. I had a guy.
Help desk is the GOAT, man, in anything.
I forgot what he did, but when I tell you, I was like, dude, you did some things. You just don't have them highlighted good. He mm-hmm. was doing, I think, help desk sys admin stuff on top of some other stuff. I'm like, bro, you really didn't did some things. Like, you're going to be all right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and you and I have talked about this, I believe, like privately via Twitter message, but unfortunately, HR practices are one of the biggest hindrances to great talent in technology across the board, right?
Definitely.
So, you know, like you said, there's somebody who, if you working a normal help desk sysadmin role, you're doing endpoint analysis, you're doing configuration management, you're doing identity and access management. Shit, you may be even delving into some networking, right? If you're troubleshooting basic networking issues,
I'm gonna say that too. Turn off, turn on.
Do you know what I mean?
Rule help desk.
The golden rule, right? So you're doing this stuff, and the problem is, and I spoke about this, I think in a Twitter space and back on Clubhouse. The problem is, a lot of times for those of us who hire, like when I hire for my SOC, if 150 candidates apply, right, mm-hmm. I'm gonna get to see 10. If 300 candidates apply, I'm gonna get to see 10. Right. And so because my company, Fortune 100 company, has a very structured HR sort of process. And that process, the first part of that process is going through that applicant tracking system. That's why I'm a very, very strong believer in getting your resume professionally done, because there are people who know how to get through that application tracking process. I'm a strong believer in having somebody help you prepare for an interview and how to answer those questions specific people. And you've seen this, right? New people, what do? They go in and they focus on the technical skills. Like, oh, I gotta learn. I gotta be ready to answer those technical questions, right? But one of the most important questions in an interview is, tell me about your experience. You know, tell me about a challenge. Tell me about a win. Mm-hmm. Tell me about a project that you worked on, because that's where you get to shine.
Right.
You know,
definitely.
And so, I think in the tech economy where we are right now, in the tech culture, help desk is underrated. I think it's one of those underrated things. I think it's becoming undervalued. And yeah, you know, I wish we were and undervalued as a job that candidates want, and undervalued as what companies are paying for it, right? So
yeah,
I don't know. I think there's a lot of gems on the help desk.
Yeah, I mean, we can, you know, you and I'm trying to see some other people. You know, I always, you know, it's hit or miss. Sometimes I'll tell somebody based on their experience, I'll say, well, you don't need to do help desk because, you know, your experience translates into this. Like, I had a guy who had an accounting background, and somebody told him to do help desk. I was like, bro, your background fits an IT auditor. Somebody should have told you to go do that route instead of going help desk. Not saying help desk won't help.
You ready for GRC? You ready for GRC already?
And that's what I directed them to. Hopefully I could reach out to them, see if that helped them some. But man, like, no lie, I've pretty much never met a person on my team who didn't do help desk that wasn't a very good person all around. They might not have been, you know, skilled as in like one specific area, but they get things done. They figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. And that take you a long way. They are by far probably the best troubleshooters you'll have. And when it just comes to thinking, they are going to come in and look at your documentation, and that's not going to make sense. Update processes and procedures, anything that doesn't make sense. Like, I used to do it all the time. Like, oh, why are we? I was like, why are we doing this? This don't make sense. Why not just call the person? Because if somebody's emails compromise you, they're going to mess around and reply to us, which has happened before. But they
get the on this last ransomware where the attacker was commenting in the Teams chat.
What? Which one?
I gotta send you that jump, boy. That man, the attacker was in their Teams chat replying to them.
And you know what? I follow a guy, or either I got the topic infosec thing to where there was like, you need to make sure this is not checked in Teams because it's checked by default, and people can get into your Teams environment this way. Mm-hmm. And that's probably one of the things that happened. I still need to go back and figure out how Robinhood got hacked from customer service.
Right.
It didn't make sense to me when I read it. But
I think the Robinhood thing was, you know what? I'm not even going to throw them people under the bus. I was going to say I think it was TeamViewer, but I'm not going to throw them people under the bus.
Hey, it might be. I mean, I'm going to go back and double back and look at it because I did the video on it.
Yeah, I think an admin had TeamViewer running on a desktop, had set it up when he went remote. So he could, you know, he basically had a desktop and a laptop, and he had set TeamViewer up on his desktop, and they compromised his TeamViewer account. I could be wrong. I was listening. I always listen to Black Hills talking about InfoSec news.
Send it.
You
know,
they run stories. Yeah. I'll send it to you. They run
in my Slack channel. I got this podcast. My fault. I've got this podcast RSS feed that I just try to feed different podcasts into. But definitely, man, you said a lot when it came to how many applicants you may see. I think the same thing. Like before I left my old company, I helped ex-manager, who's like a director there now, do a lot of interviews. And that's why one of the methods that I teach let me drop this right here. Hey, guys. I'm probably dropping this tomorrow, but my ebook is dropping Friday, 12 a.m. CST.
Let's go. Gunshots for yourself, bro. Gunshots
hey, man,
for
let me yourself. Go ahead and give me some gunshots. Listen, join the mailing list right now. Matter of fact, I'm finna plug it in right now. Hang on. This video is being sponsored by the Textual Approach to Breaking into Cybersecurity ebook. If you're thinking about getting into cybersecurity, having trouble getting interviews, need LinkedIn help, need a career roadmap, or all the above, then this is the ebook for you. Sign up below to be notified when this book is dropping. The link will be in the description.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Back to our regular schedule programming. But that's why one of the methods I teach is, you know, hey, you may not get through the ATS. So if it's a job you really want, you think your skills match up, reach out to talent acquisition. Reach out to a manager. Reach out to somebody on the team. I did it one time. At the end of last year, I just said, you know, I'm going to just start looking for new roles because I pretty much had got bored. Stuff. You know how it gets at a job. Kind of get boring. So you just start looking for different things. And
absolutely.
I remember it was like one time it was one of the roles for like Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I just found a guy that was like on the SOC team. We started chatting it up. And then I think a week and a half later, maybe, because everybody was experiencing bad weather in the same place. So we were talking about that. Now, I asked him, hey, you think you can help me figure out who is, you know, the manager for so-and-so? He said, 1 second, I think it's this person. Because he was like, yeah, we need help bad or whatever. And I didn't end up getting that role, which didn't matter anyway, because another recruiter tried to recruit me for the same role, but I already applied internally. But the fact is, it's a way to be offensive in this thing. So just because sometimes the rejection letter is not the end-all be-all, you could possibly still get that interview. And your resume probably wasn't formatted right. So when there's a will, there's a way. I won't spend a lot of time on that. If you want to know more about it, get the ebook. Or I actually got a video on my YouTube channel about, you know, how to apply to jobs with LinkedIn.
For sure.
Definitely what you said, what I used to see with candidates sometimes, I was like, because sometimes I would look at whatever role they was applying to, and I just look at some of the fluff that they had in their resume or something, and I was like, oh, whatever. I don't really care. Like, you know, I was kind of judged based on like when you come in, how you talk to us and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'll just more so ask you about stuff that you did, you know, your resume. I remember a guy said he stopped some type of attack or whatever. It was pretty interesting. So I asked him about that and he explained how he found it. I was like, okay, cool deal. I care more about those scenario practical questions than I care about, hey, what port is SMTP? Because I'm like,
yeah,
all our tools kind of already tell us all that stuff. That's what the people who study and really don't really know. So I think they actually need to change a little bit of how they write the books, because they make people go on overload thinking, oh, I need to know these ports. I need to know these ports. It's good to reference them to understand what they do. But just doing the ABCD thing in the interview doesn't show you much about a candidate.
Yeah, you know, so I kind of harp on that a lot, man. I think as trainers, we approach that as a bad practice. I don't know that that's, you know, on the candidates, right? So first, I'll keep this one brief because, I'm working on something else. So, but I'll give you the highlights of it. But we get a couple things wrong as an industry, first and foremost, right? So we approach information security as sort of this pretend pirates and digital desperados mentality, right? Like, you're going to either be popping root or you're going to either be finding APTs. And that's not the job. That's just not the job, right? I got friends who are red teamers, purple teamers, you know, gray team, which is what people are starting to call IR teams now. And obviously blue team. And that's just not the job. But we as an industry are putting that out there, right? I call it the hack hunt tweet repeat mentality. Mr. Robot, right? And so we as an industry are putting that out there, right? We as an industry are like, oh, you know, I'm putting out this POC for, you know, for this new compromise, or, you know, I'm putting out this, I'm putting out all of these IOCs we found on this threat actor, right? We put that out as an industry, excuse me. And what we don't tell people is that's not what the job looks like every day. And so people are trying to attain that level of skill, mm-hmm. right? People are trying to attain that level of skill coming through the door.
And it's right? impossible.
Number one, and you know this, there is a small percentage of companies who would ever have to deal with APTs. Most of them are defense contractors, governments, things like that. Most of us are going to be dealing with organized crime. Mm-hmm. And now, while some of the tactics and tools and some of the TTPs, as we say in the industry, are going to be the same, how you approach them is going to be different. But it's because, again, we don't understand risk. We don't understand how that ties into the business of what we're doing. And I can spill the beans on this one. I'm actually developing a concept that sort of talks about that, right? I don't have a name for it, but it's sort of modeled after the Pyramid of Pain, which is something those of us blue teamers know is like the bread and butter. But it sort of goes from, it's sort of my take on how I train my analysts and how we train at Cover 6 to do what we call knowing normal to detect evil, right? And so yeah. It's like, you know, first and foremost, you need to know security operations. What are you doing? What's your job, right? So you need to understand the technology, processes, procedures, daily tasks, outcomes of your security program. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go in there thinking, oh, I'm about to find some bad guys. No, you need to understand what the outcomes of your security program are.
You're going to check the mailbox. That's what you're going to do.
Right. Oh, and by the way, this is one thing I always tell any of my coaching clients or anybody who, you know, who is in our class. Don't go, and this is a pro tip. Don't go start that job, get in new hire orientation and not pay attention, right? Because new hire orientation is going to give you patterns of business activity that allow you to be a better analyst, right? They're going to tell you, because you got to answer those questions, right? Who are our employees? Where do they work? Who are the system and data owners? How does our company make money? I can't tell you how many times I talk to analysts and I'm like, okay, so how does your company make money?
And they don't know.
What's value? Don't know. I work for Pizza Hut. We sell pizzas. Okay, good. So what would an attacker attack? What's valuable in your network? What are people trying to get? And so if you can say, okay, I work for Pizza. I don't work for Pizza Hut, y'all. This is not an endorsement for Pizza Hut or their pizzas. But if you work for Pizza Hut, as an analyst, you say, okay, we sell pizzas, right? But ain't nobody digitally stealing pizzas. So what are people after on our network? And you say, okay, well, we do a large amount of online and e-commerce transactions. Maybe they're after customer data. Okay. So as an analyst, if you go through that and you say, oh, I know where our customer data is because I understand my infrastructure, my IT infrastructure outside of just, you know, these InfoSec tools, you say, okay, I know that these are the devices that are likely to be targeted. Oh, okay. Now that you know what devices are likely to be targeted, who normally talks to those devices? Where does data normally go when it leaves those devices? Where does data come from when it hits those devices? Understanding normal so that you know what deviations are. Because, bro, how many times you seen this? New analysts, first day they get on a job, they see an IP address from India, and they're like, oh, we hacked.
We hacked.
30 minutes. Oh, blacklisted IP.
Right. And now you done blacklisted an offshore contractor that we needed. You done killed a critical line of business because you didn't understand. You slept through new hire orientation.
You didn't took a hash and threw it in virus, so it's on you is bad. You didn't block the hash. Now nobody can download a file they need to do for work.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and so it's like we as an industry have to sort of approach is like before you love hack the box, right? Love hack the box, love Blue Team Online, love all those labbing platforms. Before you get to that, know what's normal in your environment.
Yeah.
You're within the first 30 days of you working there, you need to know who every IT department head is. You need to know the teams they own. You need to know the systems they own. You need to know where their data goes, where their data comes from. You need to learn that stuff. And that's how I train my analysts, because I don't want you freaking out over stuff that's normal patterns of business activity.
Facts. Yeah, man. You know, look, you want it, bro. Like,
I appreciate it.
You want it.
A lot of mistakes. This podcast was brought to you by multiple mistakes over decades.
Hey, but check it out. You're right, though. Like, I'm going to try to jump in on a lot of this stuff. Number one, I'm going to kind of probably go backwards. But like knowing everybody in the environment, which is something I'm having to do now as a new person, having these one-on-ones. Oh, okay. You over detections. You over infrastructure. You over fry. You over this. You over that. Like meeting all these people, trying to figure out what the company vision is, what are our biggest issues that we've been facing, how do we fix them, you know, where do I come in, what am I exactly. So you're definitely right on that. And similar to when I eventually do a course, like you said, I like all the e-learning platforms too, but I don't think the courses make it as if like you did my course maybe this week and you can go to work next week. Because they give you so much, I'll say it's good information, but too much information that you don't, a level one person not going to really need. Like you said, never. Come in and I tell some of my guys who are in when they do interviews for like SOC roles, which he ended up getting a role. I tell him, hey, man, when you, one of the exercises I gave him, I think he had a security plus. I gave him 4 or 5 questions and I let him answer them in his own words. Then I came back and I told him why his stuff was wrong and what he should look for. And one of the big things I harped on for him to use is trend analysis, paying attention to trends. You know, you might see this service account with 5,000 events in Splunk for what's called, and he said, oh, something's going on. I say, wait, well, did you go back over a week, 30 days to see if this is a trend first? And then I was like, oh, so like most of everything that you see is going to be based off of a trend, whether it's a lot of stuff happening or then the trend might be, you know, you see some and it only fired a couple of times. You're like, that's odd. Let me look at that. And that might be something. That might be an anomaly. So it's that good medium. And you learn that one of the biggest things, like you said, is learning your environment. If you can learn your environment, which takes time, because by the time I left my old company, I was there 3 years and change. So most of us who was there since the summer of 2018, we had pretty much knew everything. Now coming in, man, listen, you know, sock tails, bro, taking over for another provider. We took over for, I don't care. We took over for DXC. And, man, let me say, they tried to sabotage us. They waited to give us access to about 1 to 2 days before we were supposed to take over the contract on July 1st, 2018. Oh, wow. I'm talking about, it was only a couple of us. The team wasn't even fully staffed yet, working nights. I think I worked probably like 60 hours that first week. Like, trash playbooks, using trash Q-Radar.
Don't give me, you know what? I'm not going to bash Q-Radar right now.
Man, I'm going to hit this for Q-Radar. But,
well-deserved.
That was crazy. But once probably by the end of that year, we got a better understanding of the environment. Like, you know, I think I've said in one of my old videos about how, you know, I was ignorant about the cloud. Like, I was like, when we first started, I seen alerts about S3 buckets. I didn't even know what they was. And so even something like that, you say, man, what is this? And you kind of trying to triage and then you research, oh, this is what an S3 bucket does. And this is what it does. This could happen if it's left public and people can access it. This is the type of tags that should be on the buckets. And once you figure that stuff out, oh, they just spun it off a test and they deleted it afterwards and learned how to look for them. And, oh, that's just, you know, that's a, what is it? Guard duty, or that's Datadog working with AWS, like all these different plugins, Ansible, Jenkins. Then you kind of like, okay, this is normal, you know? And sometimes in the beginning,
that's
you might have that
deep
dive on an alert, but then now, hey, you wrote it up in your alert. Hey, this is not, you know, this is a false positive, booty-boo, this what happened, this is expected behavior, this particular. And people take for granted having access to look up their positions and stuff in the company, like what they do. You know, I've found some stuff like you had
save you.
Right. You know, so, okay, cool. This dude is an engineer or software engineer. He 9 out of 10, this is work-related. This person is a cook. They shouldn't be doing this on their computer. What's going on? Something like that could tip you off. Like, so it's they try to make, like you say, all this, you know, desperados, the harder we fall type of shooting them up stuff coming into work. But it's a lot of more common sense than anything.
Yeah, you said a couple things that like stood out, right? So a theme that we've talked about here is pattern matching, right? Understanding those patterns. And it goes to back to what we talk about with the fundamentals, right? It's like, so you got your security plus, you know what Kerberos is, right? Do you know what Kerberos looks like in the logs? You know what I mean? Right. Cause you might be going through a Splunk log and be like, bro, something's up. Like, this user's logging in 15 times in a minute, right? Like, that's not humanly possible. And it's like, yeah, okay, you sure it's him? Or did that user change their password? Did that user change their password? And now Kerberos is replicating that password across domain controllers, right?
Thanks. And then you can go and look, while we're talking, I'm seeing one of my bookmark things. It's one of my favorite sites I was using working at the SOC, the Windows Security Log Event, ultimatewindowssecurity.com. I go to that all the time. And look,
Them logs.
What even ID is that? Because, like, I gave an example in one of my videos, was like one of my vlogs, talking about how when we had SharpHound and Bloodhound introduced into the environment, and I was like, I'm telling the people, hey, y'all put this rule in here, but our guy's not handling it right, and we're going to miss something. And it's always not if, but it's when people don't listen to you. And that's exactly
every
what
time.
Happened. But what happened is because people didn't really go do their due diligence and research what these things do, what to look for when they fire. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened, you know. But I already put that on a video about what happened when, you know, it's a real breach. But that's like, you know.
You said something, though. Understand them event logs, man. I got a little PowerShell script that I've been using since PowerShell 3. And it's literally just a little function that takes that Microsoft URL for event logs, and then you plug in the number as a parameter, and it opens that Microsoft page in a browser. Still use it to this day. It's like four of the most useful lines I've ever written in my life.
Right. And you know what's funny? That's something I want to, it's hard for me, man, because I be creating content and I be doing this and that, but I'm going to take some time. I do want to get better at Bash, PowerShell, to actually do it where it could be useful for me. Because it can help, you know, reduce errors on my part before you just make a script. Mm-hmm. It can do all that. But yeah, that's why when I interview people, like some dudes, like one of the guys I know is finna interview in my old company. And I remember the people he's finna interview with try to grill people. Why? I don't know. I don't really try to grill
I hate
you.
That, man.
I just want to see how you going to answer certain questions. And what I do is I ask you stuff that I've seen at work that you might, if you're in our environment, possibly I'll say, okay, how would you handle this? How would you handle that? Because I say something similar, like, okay, let's say, for example, I'll say, how would you handle a rule that just was put in place, doesn't have a playbook or anything, but it's first time firing? What would you do? And I just want to see how somebody approach it. And you know, people think that's like a simple question, but it's also a good question because it's going to happen. You get a message from the content dude, hey, I just enabled these three rules. They might fire today. Nobody's worked them. So you're going to have to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So some people.
Yep, how to work without that playbook.
Right. And some people's weak at like saying, oh, well, I'll say, ain't no documentation. So you can't say, a lot of people say, oh, I'm just going to ask my teammates and blah, blah. I'm like, well, you can't because nobody worked it. And so I would just say, well, you know, how you thought about I'm going to look up the correlation search and see what why it was made and what's it looking for. Mm-hmm. You know,
what is this alert's purpose in life? What is it? What is it telling me? Don't, because you what do new SOC analysts do? The first thing they go to is especially in Splunk, man. I love that they have MITRE ATT&CK in there, but I hate it sometimes too, because you know it'll say multiple failed logins, brute force, and they go, and so that SOC analyst goes in there trying to find brute force. Right. And I'm just like, hey, wait a minute. Before you go look for password spray, go find out what this rule is telling you. Mm-hmm. Go find out what that rule's purpose is.
See, how many actual failures is it? Is it actual brute force or is it wrong? Because I would go back through and say, man, this is not a legitimate brute force rule. The threshold needs to be changed. Because if threshold change to fire is less, that means we have more than likely when it does fire, it'll be, you know, true positive and we'll know what's going on. So and that's just going to segue to something else. Like tuning is probably, if not one of the biggest issues that people probably face in the SOC, because alert fatigue, all the business departments keep on trying to ingest logs into your Splunk. So they just throwing crap out there and they not listening to y'all when y'all trying to tell them, hey, this rule don't work. Y'all got all these things firing when you need to go on Tanium and say this, this, and this, if this fire, then this need to fire into Splunk, not fire for this. Oh, LSAS. But what happened with the LSAS? Like, it was a whole bunch of crap. But it was ADFS, a good experience to learn.
ADFS doing normal ADFS shit. And it's like, now I got 40 alert. Man, get out of here. Dude, I had one, man. It was on me. I wrote a rule bad. I wrote a terrible rule, man. And ADFS was basically, it was that process between ADFS provisioning the account, right? So ADFS provisions the account. It provisions the account, creates the account. In Windows, that looks like a privileged action, mm-hmm. right? And the object is the user's account. The actual source is ADFS. I didn't tune that out, right? So you had that provisioning, right? Then you had that group assignment based on the rules in place for that assignment group. Then you have that user log in for the first time, which sets all those Kerberos rules in place because they're changing their password back to back. And so you have that one user just for onboarding firing off 40 to 60 alerts. And so tuning becomes very important. Textual talk, I'm telling y'all right now, false positives are the real APTs. Like that's a hot take. False positives are the real APTs. Because you get your boys going, your SOC professionals going screen blind. Oh, it's a wrap. And like you said, they're gonna miss something. But you know, that goes back to, like we said, understanding what's normal, right? Like, if you know what Kerberos does and you know what ADFS does, right? You know what type of things they normally produce. And to your earlier point with interviews, I don't grill anybody. I don't do the whole grilling thing in the organization, because if you've made it to this point, I'm not trying to talk you out of this job. Like I'm trying to first and foremost make sure I can manage you. I'm gonna let you know that straight up front. I'm trying to make sure I can manage you. And then I'm gonna go even deeper. When I say manage you, I'm trying to make sure I don't have to manage you. Fact. I'm trying to make sure I can give you direction and you do your job. I don't want to have to manage you. I tell my team sometimes, like, you know, sometimes we have to have those difficult conversations. You've had to do this as a manager, where somebody may be underperforming, right? And I'll tell them, like, hey, I don't want to be in a position where I have to manage you. Because there are certain performance things I'm going to have to start reporting on, certain metrics I'm going to have to take. And I don't want to be in a position where I have to do that. I would like to coach you and give you direction and occasionally remind you of what our objective is. But I don't want to have to manage you. You're a professional. I'm not expecting you to be an expert. I'm expecting you to be a professional. So that's the first thing I'm looking for when I interview you, if I can manage you.
Right, man. See, and then with me, one reason why I didn't want my old team is because I had people on there that just wouldn't give effort. And that used to be the thing that pissed me off. I was like, I can coach everything else, but if you're not going to try, like, that's easy. And then it'll be repeat offenders. And that used to be pissing me off. I say every day I'm telling my manager, this person. So one of the issues was, and it's not me being sexist or misogynistic. My old manager is one of the best managers I had, but she was a woman, was always, you know, more kind and nurturing, not as stern as a man would be, because we don't have time to play games. Everybody getting paid good money to work. I'm like, I used to tell people all the time, I said, I can go take a buggy pusher from Target and get them to do this job excellent over you. I wouldn't tell them that, but if I was talking to somebody about it, because I'm just like, they going to try. I was like, and it also let me understand why ageism can be a thing, why certain people at certain ages won't get hired. I know people get mad, but we most know, like, most of us got parents, like, they already stuck in their ways. They not changing. Them people do the same type of stuff at work.
It's it's difficult. So in some situations, like, so my last manager, was a woman, and she was, so my experience was actually the opposite. She was one of the most task oriented, objective driven people I had ever worked with, and because of that, I was able to learn a lot from her. But I've also, to your point, I think age comes into play when two other variables are there: speed and what the manager's position is on what type of authority that they want to maintain. So I think generationally, right, that, the, you know, I'm going to say boomers, early Gen Xers, they sort of viewed management more for its authority and less for its leadership. So they look for, they take an authoritative role, whereas for me, later Gen Xers and early millennials, our management style is typically more of a leadership role. One, because we truly believe in work life balance. Like, this is just my job, and I love my work. You love your work. We talk about security because we love it, but at the end of the day, this is just my job.
Right.
So a manager ain't not a part of my identity. Right.
Exactly.
So I don't want to have to hold that authority over you.
Right. And then for me, so hey, free game right now, guys. I put this on my my blog on how to level up at the workplace. But how I got to my position in the last company was the fact that I just volunteered for everything. So before I ask you to do something, 9 times out of 10 is something that I would already do myself if I probably wasn't doing something else. And that's my style, because that'll get people to say, you know what? Hey, he's not going to ask me to do nothing he wouldn't do. Or he'll be the first person in the fire. Let me go rock with him. So that's kind of one of the things.
Can I king your checker piece on that? Not only volunteer for things regularly. Here's an easy win. Volunteer for the stuff nobody wants to do.
That one too.
Go volunteer to do documentation. Go volunteer, like, go to, and check this out. This was my cheat code. The way I learned everything was I would go to an engineer or a senior analyst and say, hey, can I shadow you doing this process so I can document it? And they don't want to document it. So they're like, oh, hell yeah, come on. And they will walk you step by step because they don't have to document it. So what they don't know is, they're teaching you that thing step by step, and you write the documentation, right? So here's how I would play it, bro. I had a whole Euro step on that shit. So first, I would volunteer to do the documentation. So then I go to the senior engineer and say, hey, I noticed you do this process, and I got another cheat code for you. But I'll volunteer. I say, hey, I know you do this process. I want to make sure that it's documented so that we understand the process. So not only did I get taught the process, right? So then I take my documentation. I know it's good. I know it's thorough. Then I go to my manager and I say, hey, I've been working on this documentation. I just like you to take a look at it just to make sure I'm on the right track. I know I'm on the right track. I'm trying to let you know this is what I'm working on, you know? And so you become that person. And so, you know, you become that person that's like doing the documentation that nobody wants to do. But you're also the person who is literally learning everything.
Facts. And that's what I used to do. I used to go make friends with the person who pretty much, I'm going to say, I'm going to say it, the smartest person. So a principal level person. And, you know, first thing he would always say was, hey, did you check Confluence? And after that, I would, you know, if it wasn't there, we walked through it, and that's how I learned stuff. And that got me to the point mm-hmm. where he would start saying, hey, you know, go vouch for him. And what
he know how to do it.
And what you also just told people is a way to also get a feel for the environment. You, if you update documentation, oh, when you work in something, this is what this was talking about in this and this documentation. Oh, this is how you do that. This is how you do that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and like you said, you get that vouch. You get that vouch, right? So it'll be like when next time that architect, even if it's at the architect level, you just a analyst. And y'all, you know, you have to remember different companies label things differently.
Right.
Some companies, the job titles aren't hierarchical. Some of them, it's literally an HR thing. They're trying to pitch you in a pay range. And we could do a whole nother thing on just like,
definitely.
We could do
we
a whole
might have to, we might have to do a sock series, bro. Honestly,
dude, we can do sock series. We can, I would love to do like a demystifying HR language in security, because that's a whole nother, like, confusion point.
Oh yeah, like my man just shared how he seen a job role talking about 10 years DevSecOps. She's like, this ain't even been out about like a year. Like, come on,
you gotta
man.
Demystify that language, man. So yeah, you go to the architect, but what happens is you said something. That architect has a task that he's too busy for, and he goes, oh, my man's from the SOC. I taught him how to do that. He hits you up like, hey, I got these servers that I got to add to Beyond Trust so that people can check out root passwords. You remember how to do that? And you like, yeah, send me the tickets. And so now you closing, you know, all of a sudden you pop up and it's 10 servers. You closing Beyond Trust tickets. You doing privilege management tickets as an analyst because you wrote that process. And honestly, I've done that my whole career. And this is free game for the help desk people listening. It wasn't in security, but when I wanted to transition to networking, one of the things I did, and I posted a whole thread on this on my Twitter, but I'll say it for people now. One of the things I did was I went to the networking people. First of all, I looked at the tickets that we would escalate and that they would send back with like, we need this, we need this, we need that, we need this, we need this. And I'll say, okay, what are your pain points? What are the tickets that you want us to stop escalating to you? And of course, they're just like, oh, bet. We don't want this. And I said, okay, what within these tickets, what type of either additional troubleshooting, additional notes or steps that we can just do already? Are there any of these in here? And they're like, yeah, I document them. So here you're doing two things. One, you're learning their job, right? Because that's where you want to get to. You're learning their job. Two, you're creating documentation that's going to help your team. So you're doing better at your job. Three, you're letting them know that you have an interest in networking. Oh, bonus, your manager is going to say, who did this documentation? Why are we resolving ticket? Why is our first call resolution going up? And they're going to look at the tickets and it's going to be you making, dude. So now you'll probably get a raise even before you, if not, you get a promotion. So you're doing four things. And it's all, and you did all of that just by looking at the ticketing system saying, hey, y'all send a lot of these back. Can you just show me what I need to do so y'all don't have to send them back? Hey, and not to mention, you're lowering that SLA. So you're helping the business out in so many ways.
And you just threw a lot of those key terms that people need to highlight in their resume. Like mine, I was like, I think I remained like 97% in FCR, always made SLA. Mm-hmm. All of those stuff and help desk, like put it on there.
The first call resolution.
Show your accomplishments. You help write new processes. Like, bro, I told some, I don't know what I was on. I don't know what podcast episode I was doing, but like, I used to work help desk for TSA. No lie, we had a go live with the federal air marshals. We had no idea how none of their stuff looked. So I'm talking about that's a skill. You're trying to walk somebody through something you've never seen before. That's so hard to do, but you get valuable experience and you making documentation at the same time.
Yep. And
that's one of the things.
Yeah.
So definitely. And you threw up something about when you said they found out you're interested in networking. A lot of times when people come out to me, I say, I was like, well, did you reach out to somebody at work? Like wherever you work in, like he reached out to somebody in a certain department. How you try to network with them? I was like, a lot of times they probably got some work they could throw you away. Or now you build a rapport. They got an opening. Hey, I know this person. They study for their network. Plus they got their CCNA. They've been doing this and
tell
that.
Them.
They got a good attitude. They already here. We ain't got to go through a long hiring process. You know, let's bring them on.
That one guy on the help desk who's taking on those One Networking tickets, right? He sends us all the tickets. He always has good documentation. So for example, the thing that it was for me was network access control. When we would escalate network access control tickets, they would always send them back saying, we need this, we need MAC address, we need username, we need device name, blah, blah, blah. So my team was just escalating them. And I'm like, nah. I know exactly what they need. So I went to the network admins and was like, okay, how do I find this information on the system? Right. They told me how to find it. Right. So I documented it, put it in our documentation, reduced the amount of tickets that we had to escalate something by like 30, because remember, network access control is every time we put a, this is when everything was in office. So it was every time a printer came online, every time, you know, a new VM, every time a new workstation came online, anything that needs to access to the network, new access points, all of that. So we're escalating, like our escalated tickets went down by like something by like 35 to 40%. Not only did that get the network admins, because they're like, we not getting that many tickets, right? That got my manager's eye, because it's just like, how did this happen? How are these numbers changing? Because if the tickets you escalate go down, your first call resolutions go up. And, you know, we know from help desk, that's the metric. That's the bread and butter right there. Them first call resolutions, get them out of here. Like,
we used to have like between 5 and 15 minutes for R.
Yeah. And so you can do that. But these are the things though, bro. And we talk about this. A lot of us experience talk about this in the community. Nobody's telling people this. They're just like, oh, go get your Security Plus. You know what I mean? Like nobody's telling people this. Nobody's telling people like
that. And that's what I tell people, because listen, me and you, can honestly, because we've been doing this so long, we could probably go on for like 3 hours of like, why that's not the best advice for somebody. Because then they go get it. Oh, I'm ready. No, you're not, grasshopper. You still got, you know, much to learn. Now, don't doubt you got the aptitude, but it's still something.
You know the language now. You know the language now.
But see, even then, sometimes they don't, because they studied so fast, they didn't learn nothing. True. So that's why I'm against, you know, oh, get it in like a week or two. I'm like, it's cool. If your objective, if it's for work and you just need it for work, for like you government or something, cool. But if your objective is to learn something and get a job, it doesn't benefit you to just get the cert that fast, because like what we was talking about earlier, when they get in the interview, they're going to freeze up. They're not going to know how to answer nothing. They probably not going to remember the stuff that they answer either, just because they got it so fast.
Facts, because so I'm not asking you no questions about ports. I ain't asking you about ports.
Well, I ain't asking you about RAID or nothing.
I ain't asking you about none of that stuff, man. Because, like you said, ports, I'm gonna Google it. Like, you know what I mean? I'm gonna do a Wireshark filter that shows me the port, the protocol right next to the port, like, in real life. But what I want to know is, for our analyst one, junior analyst, I don't ask any security questions. I don't. And it, unfortunately, and this is, again, this is one of those HR battles. Unfortunately, you have to have a Security Plus for our analyst one position. I have barked at everybody like, we need to change that. But it's an unfortunate thing that it's a requirement. But I ask mostly like, you know, tell me how you troubleshoot your home router. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a process, but the answers I like to hear is when people go, I do this first, then I do this, then I do this, then I do this, then I do this. I'm like, oh, that person has a process.
And you know,
go ahead, my bad.
No, you good. I was going to tell people why you're on that, because like I said, I tell people, you know, some of my lows and my highs. I had an interview with Square for a role last year, and it was really minuscule, but the feedback was that the interviewer couldn't really tell how I solve problems. Mm-hmm. And I also knew that because the way when I talk and how it comes out is not a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a 1, 3, 5, whatever. But when I put it on paper, it's in order. So I was receptive of that. So I understood that. But that is sometimes what, like you said, what they're looking for. Like, how do you solve an issue? I couldn't show him that I, you know, had a concise way of doing that, you know, consistently over and over again, you know, which.
That's the word. That's the word. Consistently. That's the. Yep. That's the word. That's the one. That's the dude. Like, everything we do. I mean, anybody who's ever studied for any security certification know every damn model we have is a circle, or it's like some arrows pointing. It's always a process. And for me, that's one of the most important things you can learn, because it becomes repeatable. And all that comes back to understanding what normal is, so that you can identify what abnormal is, when something's strange. And like you said, and we all bombed interviews, dude. I bombed one so bad. If we ever do like a hacker happy hour, dude, I got to tell you about an interview where I asked them, could I leave? Like, I literally was like, hey, y'all got work to do. I need to go cry in the car. Can I go home? Like, real quick. I don't know how much time we got, but.
Yeah, I was getting ready to probably wrap it up for us in a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I won't go into that, but we'll have to do like a hacker happy hour, because I got to tell y'all how I bombed this interview to the point. And it was a 4-hour interview, and they made me stay for the whole 4 hours. And I'm like, y'all know I'm doing terribly. I know I'm doing terribly. What are we even doing here?
Right. You know what like the old folks say, if it don't kill you, it make you stronger.
Oh, it definitely did. It definitely did. I ain't bombed another interview since.
But hey, let me do this while we, let me see what we could try to do. We could put this on and I'm gonna loop it. But yeah, man, definitely a lot of gems, and this so good. We might have to either make it a part two or whatever. I have an idea, but I've been doing these live streams lately, and I've thought about maybe if I find some other sock people, we just go on live, bro. And we can talk about interviews we bummed or stuff we don't like, you know, like anything. And I think it's, you know, it's always beneficial for the people on the outside looking in, kind of like the last one I just did with Dayspring. You know, I had a guy who literally, and the reason why he even said why I helped him, just because I saw his passion and zeal to do what he's trying to do. But a guy that had no previous experience, and then what it actually was, still was not the same as what he studied. And so all those things are going to be, I think, will be beneficial when we get into it. But man, I appreciate you for stopping by. Tell the people how they can follow you.
Absolutely, bro. Yeah, man, the E is for Extra on Twitter. I drop some of this same stuff all the time. I talk tech, I talk hip hop, mostly tech. But yeah, just follow me. My DMs are open if you want to engage with me. I'm a teacher, so you know, I am one of those people who will answer your questions. But for all of you new people out there, on networking tip, always ask if it's okay to DM people, just because people aren't trying to be mean, but sometimes, you know, there are other ways, better ways to get in touch with them. But my DMs are open. Cover6solutions.com. Sign up for our SOC analyst prep class. It's basically me going into detail about this and some other technical stuff. So love to have you as a student. Our next session is January 11th. And we're going to have a special guest on the 13th. Y'all might be familiar with him. I don't know if my finger's going the right way. So make sure y'all join. Make sure y'all check us out. At least follow the newsletter. We have multiple sessions a year. And that's how you can get in touch with me.
Definitely. And before we also let you go, is Cover 6 hiring?
Cover 6 is not hiring right now, but Cover 6 does do some recruiting and some consulting. So if you're a pen tester, specifically if you're a pen tester or a red teamer, you definitely want to get in touch with Cover 6, Cover 6 Solutions. So you can hit me up. You can follow Cover 6 Solutions on Twitter, or you can join the newsletter and go by the career page.
Definitely, man. Y'all know where to get at me at. Textual Chatter on the YouTube, on the Twitter, Textual Consultant, Instagram. I got a TikTok. I don't know, they be removing my sound sometimes, so it'll be making me mad. LinkedIn, all my stuff will be in the link in the description. Eggs will be in there as well, but you know, like I always say,